Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now! In France, victory for the left's new popular front keeps the far right from gaining power in the final round of snap elections. We'll go to Paris and get response from the French-Iranian writer Marjane Satrapi, author of Persepolis and Women, Life, Freedom. We'll also talk to her about Tehran for an update on the Iranian elections, where voters chose a reformist candidate who's criticized a mandatory hijab law for women and promised to disband Iran's morality police.
I consider your vote as a heavy responsibility on my shoulders, and I pledge to continue to be a listening ear for your words and a voice for the voiceless and the rejected.
But first to Britain, where the Labour Party has won power for the first time in 14 years. As Labour Party leader Keir Starmer becomes Prime Minister, tens of thousands marched Saturday in London for an immediate Gaza ceasefire, including the former Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, who easily kept his long-standing seat after running as an independent against Labour.
Stop the arms trade with Israel immediately. Stop the use of RAF Qatari as a base of Israel for taking it in. And use their position immediately, the UN, to demand complete recognition and ceasefire now.
Jeremy Corbyn will join us from London. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In France, the recently formed leftist coalition, the New Popular Front, pulled off a surprise victory in the second round of parliamentary elections Sunday. The left-green alliance came together in a bid to stave off the far right after Marine Le Pen's National Rally Party made major advances in the first round and in recent EU elections. But the New Popular Front, which won 182 seats in the National Assembly, still fell short of the 289 seats required for an absolute majority. Sunday's results came as a major blow to not only the far right, which came in third, but to French President Emmanuel Macron, who called the snap election in the hopes French voters would keep his centrist coalition in place. Macron's prime minister, Gabriel Attal, offered his resignation today. But Macron asked him to stay on temporarily. The head of the Progressive France Unbowed party, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, spoke following his coalition's victory Sunday.
Le président a le pouvoir.
The president has the power. The president has the duty to call on the New Popular Front to govern. It is ready. The New Popular Front will respect the mandate according to the vote cast for its candidates. Our given word will be respected. The New Popular Front will apply its manifesto, all its manifesto and nothing but its manifesto.
The New Popular Front has vowed to raise the minimum wage, cap price of essential foods and utilities, and to throw out Macron's hugely unpopular pension reform, which raised the retirement age. The group says it will reimpose taxes on the wealthiest and corporations. The New Popular Front also says it'll recognize Palestinian statehood after Macron's government earlier this year refused to do so. We'll have more on the French elections later in the broadcast. Meanwhile, in the United Kingdom, Keir Starmer has become Britain's new prime minister after his Labour Party trounced the Conservatives in a general election Thursday. It's the first time Labour's been in power in 14 years, but the election lacked much of the energy and hope for change that marked France's vote, with the lowest turnout in more than 20 years. Starmer, a centrist politician, vowed to lead a government of, quote, stability and moderation. He made his first official address as leader on Friday.
For too long now, we've turned a blind eye as millions slid into greater insecurity. Nurses, builders, drivers, carers, people doing the right thing, working harder every day, recognised at moments like this before, yet as soon as the cameras stop rolling, their lives are ignored. I want to say very clearly to those people, not this time.
Among the other notable results in the UK election, former Conservative Prime Minister Liz Truss lost her seat in Parliament. Far-right figurehead Nigel Farage, best known for pushing Brexit, won his election in his eighth attempt to gain a seat. Irish nationalist Sinn Féin became Northern Ireland's largest party in the British Parliament for the first time. And the former Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn easily retained his longtime seat after running as an independent in his London district against Labour. In one of his first moves, Starmer declared the UK-Rwanda deportation plan dead and buried. We'll go to the UK for more after headlines and speak with MP Jeremy Corbyn. Voters in Iran have elected Masoud Pezeshkian as its new president. The reformist candidate defeated hardliner Saeed Jalili on Saturday. Pezeshkian is a heart surgeon who'd served as health minister under reformist President Mohammad Khatami. Pezeshkian has criticized Iran's mandatory hijab law for women and has promised to disband Iran's morality police. He spoke in Tehran Saturday.
Vote is a heavy responsibility on my shoulders, and I pledge to continue to be a listening ear for your words and a voice for the voiceless and the rejected.
Saturday's election was held 6 weeks after the Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi died in a helicopter crash. We'll have more on the election later in the show, going to Tehran. Israel's war in Gaza has entered its 10th month as the official Palestinian death toll has reached nearly 38,200. But a new report in the British medical journal Lancet estimates the actual death toll could be 186,000 or even higher. That's roughly 8% of Gaza's population. The report looks at how war leads to indirect deaths due to shortages of medical care, food, shelter and water. Earlier today, Israel attacked the Gaza City headquarters of UNRWA, the UN Palestinian Refugee Agency. On Saturday, an Israeli airstrike on an UNRWA school killed at least 16 Palestinians and injured 50 others. Eyewitnesses said the dead included many children.
We came here running to see the targeted area. We saw bodies of children in pieces. This is a playground. There was a trampoline here. There were swing sets and vendors. Civilians were killed. It's a civilian school. These are United Nations schools for the UNRWA. It is supposed to be safe for people and should not be targeted any time.
On the diplomatic front, Hamas officials have reportedly agreed to a U.S. proposal to begin talks on a new ceasefire and hostage deal. Multiple news outlets report Hamas has dropped its demand that Israel first agree to a permanent ceasefire before any agreement is signed. Meanwhile, the Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant has warned Israel's attacks on Hezbollah in Lebanon will continue even if a truce agreement is reached in Gaza. In news from the occupied West Bank, Israel's Supreme Planning Council has approved nearly 5,300 new homes for settlers in the West Bank. The group Peace Now, Shalom Achshav, says this will result in the largest single Israeli land grab since the Oslo Accords. On Sunday, Israeli protesters blocked highways across the country as part of nationwide demonstrations calling for a ceasefire and hostage deal, as well as for the resignation of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Meanwhile, the Israeli newspaper Haaretz has revealed new details about how Israeli military officials ordered repeated attacks inside Israel on October 7th in an effort to prevent Hamas from taking hostages into Gaza. It remains unknown how many Israelis killed on that day were actually killed by Israeli forces implementing what's known as the Hannibal Directive. One military source told Haaretz, quote, the instruction was to turn the area of the fence into an extermination zone to close the line of contact towards the west, unquote. President Biden's facing more calls from Democratic lawmakers to drop out of the presidential race as questions continue to mount over his mental fitness. Five members of Congress have publicly called for him to step aside. Four more senior Democratic lawmakers have said so in a private call. Biden's repeatedly vowed to stay in the race. He sat down for an interview on Friday with ABC's George Stephanopoulos, who asked if he could beat Donald Trump.
Have you convinced yourself that only you can defeat him?
I convinced myself of two things. I'm the most qualified person to beat him, and I know how to get things done.
If you can be convinced that you cannot defeat Donald Trump, will you stand down?
Well, it depends if, and if the Lord Almighty comes out and tells me that, I might do that.
That was from Biden's first televised interview since his disastrous debate with Donald Trump. Biden also spoke to two radio stations where he was interviewed by hosts who asked him questions that were scripted by Biden's own campaign. Biden still stumbled during the interview, saying at one point that he was proud to be, quote, the first black woman to serve with a black president.
Proud to be, as I said, the first vice president, first black woman to serve with a black president.
Boeing has agreed to a plea deal with the Justice Department that'll allow it to avoid facing a criminal trial over a pair of deadly 737 MAX crashes in 2018 and 19 that killed all 346 people on board. Under the deal, Boeing will plead guilty to a conspiracy fraud charge and pay $243 million in additional fines. A lawyer representing families of passengers killed in the crashes has already filed an objection to the agreement. The attorney, Paul Cassell, said, quote, through crafty lawyering between Boeing and DOJ, the deadly consequences of Boeing's crime are being hidden, unquote. NATO nations have agreed to provide Ukraine $43 billion in new military aid next year. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg confirmed the deal ahead of NATO's three-day summit in Washington that begins Tuesday. This comes as Russia continues to attack Ukraine's energy infrastructure, leaving more than 100,000 people without power. Earlier today, Russian strikes killed 29 people, including two who died in an attack on a children's hospital in Kyiv. On Friday, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in a trip condemned by Ukraine and EU leaders. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is meeting with Putin today. More than 130 million people in the U.S. were under high heat alerts this weekend as a heat wave intensified in California and other areas. Temperatures could reach 128 degrees Fahrenheit in Death Valley today. Meanwhile, in Northern California, wildfires have forced around 30,000 people from their homes. Hurricane Beryl has made landfall on the Texas coast near Matagorda as a Category 1 storm. About 200,000 people in Houston have already lost power. The storm killed at least 11 people as it battered Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula and several Caribbean islands. The storm has been fueled by record temperatures in the Atlantic. A funeral was held Saturday in Utica, New York, for Nya Mwe, a 13-year-old boy who was shot to death by police 2 days after he graduated from middle school. Nya Mwe was a refugee born in Burma. His death has shattered the close-knit community of Karen refugees in Utica. His brother wrote online, quote, our family moved to America 9 years ago as refugees from Myanmar to find a better life safe from law enforcement killings and ethnic cleansing, unquote. Three officers involved in the shooting have been placed on administrative leave. And the longtime labor organizer and scholar Jane McAlevey has died at the age of 59 of multiple myeloma. Jane McAlevey dedicated her life's work to empowering rank-and-file workers, training tens of thousands around the world to effectively strengthen their unions. She was also a prolific writer, authoring many books and articles, including as the strikes correspondent for The Nation. In April, she sat down here in Democracy Now! Studios for one of her last interviews.
You know, the work is going to go on. And that's what makes me happy, is that I did a lot of succession planning. The work is going to go. And if workers just keep winning, one person falls, one soldier goes down. I've always thought of myself as a soldier. You know, one soldier is going to go down in the fight, and there's a ton more soldiers being produced every day in all of these campaigns and all of the training programs. And I do think that they're going to win, ultimately, because people have had it with capitalism in 2024.
That was noted labor organizer and scholar Jane McAlevey speaking in April in Democracy Now! Studios. To see our interview and the web exclusive we did afterwards, go to democracynow.org. She died Sunday at the age of 59 in Muir Beach, California. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Britain, where the Labour Party won Thursday's election and party leader Keir Starmer will become Britain's new prime minister, putting Labour in power for the first time in 14 years. Starmer's a centrist politician who vowed to lead a government of, quote, stability and moderation in his first official address Friday.
We've changed the Labour Party, returned it to service, and that is how we will govern. Country first, party second. Yet, if I'm honest, service is merely a precondition of hope. And it is surely clear to everyone that our country needs a bigger reset, a rediscovery of who we are.
Starmer's new foreign minister, David Lammy, promised the now ruling Labour Party will take a more balanced position in Israel and Palestine. In a phone call Sunday with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister Starmer reportedly said there's an urgent need for a Gaza ceasefire, but also vowed the UK would continue its, quote, vital cooperation with Israel. Meanwhile, more than 10,000 pro-Palestinian demonstrators marched through London Saturday, calling for an immediate ceasefire, including former Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, who easily retained his long-standing seat after running as an independent in his London district against the Labour Party.
Stop the arms trade with Israel immediately. Stop the use of RAF Qatari as a base in which the arms are taken in. And use their position immediately at the UN to demand complete recognition and a ceasefire now.
Among the other notable results in Thursday's election, Conservative Liz Truss, the shortest-serving British prime minister at just 49 days, lost her seat in Parliament. Far-right figurehead Nigel Farage, best known for pushing Brexit, won his election in his eighth attempt to gain a seat. And Irish nationalist Sinn Féin became Northern Ireland's largest party in the British Parliament for the first time. For more, we're joined by two people. Nasreen Malik is author and columnist for The Guardian. Her latest piece, Pro-Palestine Votes Aren't Sectarian, dismissing them would be a dangerous mistake for Labour. And we're joined in London by British Parliament member Jeremy Corbyn, who served as Labour Party leader from 2015 to 2020. We welcome you both back to Democracy Now! Let's begin with Jeremy Corbyn. If you can talk about the significance of Labour's victory and then your own, though you're the former Labour leader like Keir Starmer, you are now you now ran against Labour to retain your seat.
Labour has clearly got a very large parliamentary majority and mandate from this election. There's no question about that. There are over 400 Labour MPs. However, if you dig into the results, you find some quite interesting differences in this. The actual Labour vote nationally was less in this election than it was in 2019 and much less than it was in 2017. What's happened in this election is the Conservative vote has collapsed, and much of that vote has gone to Nigel Farage and his far-right Reform Party. They got over 4 million votes, even though I'm not sure they even contested every single constituency. And so, whilst Labour has this huge parliamentary majority, their national share of the vote was only around a third of all votes cast. It's a very low mandate for a government to govern. In fact, I think it's the lowest mandate any government has ever had in Britain. So they need to be cautious about that. The Labour vote went down in many constituencies, particularly in urban areas, largely because of the stance on Palestine and Gaza, but also because I don't think the Labour economic offer really meets the needs of the time. So there are some huge issues going on here. On my own case, as you know, was leader of the Labour Party until 2020. And I was denied entry to the parliamentary caucus of the Labour Party after an inquiry in later that year. And so I've been an independent MP, but a member of the Labour Party ever since that time. The party then announced that I was not eligible to even apply to be the Labour candidate for Islington North. Many of my constituents were very angry about this, and lobbied me to put my name forward as an independent and say, you cannot take this, we cannot take this, please stand as an independent. So I did. And from nothing for 5 weeks ago, we built an enormous campaign and won with 49.4% of the vote, not quite 50%, but almost there. And we had hundreds of volunteers come in from local communities, but all over the country. And we won the election on the principal positions of a ceasefire in Gaza and recognition of Palestine, on an economic strategy of redistribution of wealth and power by reducing taxation of the poorest, increasing taxation for the richest, and an absolute commitment to a Green New Deal and environmental policies, but particularly housing and stress issues in my constituency. So we're very proud that our constituency voted differently and gave me that mandate. I'm joined now in Parliament by four other independents who were elected in different parts of the country. And we will be holding the government to account. I'll be speaking up for local issues, but crucially, we're going to be establishing a local forum in which I will report every month on what I've been doing, but also all the local community campaign organisations will also be taking part. So it's a different form of politics, and I've now been elected 11 times from my constituency, and we're very proud of the result we achieved.
So in one of your first acts after your re-election, Jeremy Corbyn, you were out in the streets with tens of thousands of others. I'm wondering your response to the conversation that apparently the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had with Prime Minister Starmer, who reportedly said an urgent need for a Gaza ceasefire, but also vowed the UK would continue its, quote, vital cooperation with Israel.
Well, it sounds to me like there's a contradiction in that conversation. Either you have a ceasefire or you don't. And if you have a ceasefire, that means an end, surely, to the supply of arms to Israel, because we are complicit, as is the USA, in the supply of weapons to Israel, which are being used to bomb Gaza. 40,000 people have died in Gaza. Probably half of those are children. And the bombing has restarted again this morning, and many more are dying from hunger, malnutrition, dying from wholly preventable conditions like diarrhea and dehydration. And so it is an absolutely urgent need. And if the new government and the new Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, and the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, really want to bring about a ceasefire, then they've got to say to Israel, we will no longer occasion and supply you with weapons to bomb Gaza, and this ceasefire must be accompanied by withdrawal of Israeli forces both from Gaza and from the West Bank. Otherwise, what's going to happen? Is Israel going to start bombing again? Are those troops going to start moving tanks around in Gaza again? This is a desperate humanitarian crisis brought about by the bombardment by Israel. And I'm not alone in saying this. I've had calls from people in Israel, even members of Knesset, Ofer Kassim, for example, saying they absolutely agree with everything that we said at our rally outside Parliament on Saturday afternoon. The issue of Gaza has had a massive effect on the general election in Britain, and it's not going to go away.
And finally, let me ask you about Starmer saying that the Rwanda deportation policy is buried and dead.
I'm very pleased that the Rwanda policy has finished. It was always a horrible idea, of essentially outsourcing our human rights responsibilities to refugees by deporting not all, but some of them to Rwanda. Very expensive deal in which the Rwanda government was given over £200 million to facilitate this. I'm pleased that is over. But, and this is a big but, the language used by some of the Labour front bench leaders in the election election about desperate people crossing the channel to try and find a place of safety in Britain and about the issue of refugees in general was very, very unfortunate and very bad. We are in the midst of a global refugee crisis. Surely the responsibility of the wealthiest countries in the world is to do two things. Look at the causes of why people seek refuge, and secondly, treat them as human beings, not as enemies or unwelcome arrivals. And the language that was used by the far right in France and other places, and by Farage in this country, is horrible and divisive and dangerous. But I'm very pleased that the elections in France yesterday at least rejected the Le Pen far right. It doesn't necessarily mean all of the migration policies in France are going to change overnight, but I think it's a very important sign that when the left comes together, as it did through the alliance that was formed very rapidly in order to fight the second round of the French elections, they can both offer hope to working class communities that have seen their living standards fall, in this case, in this country, by 20% in the past decade or so, and also stand up for human rights and the needs and rights of refugees. The refugees come from countries where there's been war. They come from Afghanistan, from Iraq, they come from Syria, they come from Libya, they come from places that have been subject to war and bombardment. And so we need to wake up. Are we going to allow this decade to go on with wars in Ukraine, in Sudan, in Congo, in obviously in Gaza, or are we going to be serious about bringing peace? And I would hope that there was going to be pressure on the NATO summit next week to bring peace rather than more weapons and more war.
Finally, Jeremy Corbyn, Jean-Luc Mélenchon of France has been described as the Jeremy Corbyn of France. Your assessment of this leader of the left?
He's a good friend, and we have worked together, and we had a very good time discussing lots of issues when we both attended with the South Africans the International Court of Justice hearing on the allegations of genocide against Israel brought by South Africa. He has brought together a coherent left coalition with a very clear economic strategy in which he's able to unite those that have been economically marginalized in France, as well as standing up against the rise of the far right and racism. I thank him for that, admire him for that, and send him a message. And I'm looking forward to meeting him again very soon and working with him, because the unity of progressive left and pro-human rights forces is a very important thing in our society. Are we to allow the economic inequality to dominate our lives, or are we going to do something about redistribution of wealth and power? That's what I pledged in my election address, and that is exactly the mandate that I will carry into this parliament.
Jeremy Corbyn, want to thank you for being with us. Independent British Member of Parliament ran against Labour to retain his seat. He was the Labour leader from 2015 to 2020, speaking to us from London. Also with us to discuss Thursday's election in Britain is Nisreen Malik, author and columnist for The Guardian, where her latest piece is headlined, "Pro-Palestine Votes Aren't Sectarian. Dismissing them would be a dangerous mistake for Labour." Her book is titled, "We Need New Stories, Challenging the Toxic Myths Behind Our Age of Discontent." Your assessment of what happened in Britain as you speak to us from Nairobi, from Kenya.
It was definitely a striking landslide victory. That is nothing to be disputed. It's a 170-seat majority and one of the biggest landslides in British political history, biggest majority in 25 years. But there is an interesting story underneath that landslide narrative. There's a reduced voter share, there's reduced turnout, and seats previously held by the Tories, which were then won by Labour, were sometimes won not necessarily by a huge number of votes. So the story of the election is Tory collapse, a Labour landslide, but a sort of wide but thin mandate that Labour really needs to solidify over the next 5 years, if this is not going to be a temporary win for the party.
You can talk about the new Prime Minister Keir Starmer's positions on domestic issues like the dire condition of public services, unemployment, and then as well as, and you took this on in your latest piece, Gaza.
Starmer is a politician that has pivoted very clearly from a left-wing